In part by a grant from Horene's Pianos Plus, your Steinway Piano Showroom in Bloomington. Horene's Pianos Plus offers new and pre-owned pianos by Steinway & Sons, Boston by Steinway, and other fine pianos. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods, with foods from around the world, including imported chocolates, cookies, coffee, extra virgin olive oil, and featuring a selection of new cheeses every week. World Harvest Foods, at the intersection of 6th and University in Champaign, encourages you to join them in supporting public radio.
I'm Interim Station Manager Jay Pierce. Thanks to you, we succeeded our pledge drive goals this year. That's great. But they only make up about a third of our annual listener support. And frankly, we're a little behind on that overall goal with just a couple of weeks to go. So please call 244-9455 to make sure your membership's current. Make a first contribution, or if you can, an additional gift. That's 244-9455. And thanks so much for supporting WILL Urbana.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Before we get going here, we have some weather information we need to pass on to you. The National Weather Service in Lincoln has issued a flash flood warning for Piatt County in central Illinois that will be in effect until 4 o'clock this afternoon. Just a few minutes ago, National Weather Service Doppler radar indicated very heavy rain has fallen across Piatt County. The radar has estimated rainfall rates of between 1.5 inches to 2 inches per hour, with those storms moving into western Piatt. A flash flood warning means flooding is imminent or occurring. If you're in a flood-prone area, it's imminent or occurring. And if you are in one of these areas, you should definitely move to higher ground right away. If you live along creeks and streams, you're especially vulnerable to the effects of flash flooding. And do not try to cross flooded areas by foot or in a vehicle. And report flash flooding to your local ESDA or the nearest law enforcement agency, and then they'll pass that information on to the National Weather Service. So again, this is a flash flood warning for Piatt County in central Illinois. That will be in effect until 4 o'clock this afternoon. Of course, if there is additional weather information, as soon as it's available to us, we will pass it on to you. Well, good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to have back here in the studio with us Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive in Champaign. We try to have Rick with us every season, generally, so that ends up being four times a year, at least, to answer questions about cars and car care. And we're getting some mic feedback. I think maybe one of those headphones that we moved in here, the volume is turned up. So, yeah, they got Rick's on the case. I think he's got it turned up. So we take care of that, and we say thank you very much and good morning. And
good morning.
Glad to have you here. People have questions about cars. All they have to do is pick up the telephone and give us a call. Tell us the make and the model and the best description you can of the problem, and I know that Rick will do his best to give you a diagnosis and suggest how you might deal with it. 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. Well, we're getting some callers here lined up already. Maybe I'll just ask you to talk a little bit about general maintenance, things that people might keep in mind now that we are solidly into the hottest part of the year. It's, you know, July is on average the warmest month, but we've already had some pretty hot temperatures here in June, so we can expect it's going to continue to be hot. Are there particular things people should be thinking about that apply to summer?
Well, the one area that I think a lot of people don't really think about in the summer is their battery. Most people consider that an item that if they're going to have a problem, it'll occur in the winter, and that really isn't true. It does obviously have failures in the winter, but it seems like they're more prone to failure actually in the warmer weather. Most batteries' life expectancy is about 5 years. So it's a good idea to determine the age of your battery, and if it's 5 years old, I would just suggest replacing it. It's not that costly of an item, and the inconvenience of having the vehicle towed and being without it for half a day or a day, whatever the case may be, I would think would make it reasonably worth considering doing. Yeah. The other thing is, typically in the summer, people are taking trips, and before you take a trip, it's a good idea to have your vehicle inspected from a safety standpoint. Tires, air conditioning system seems to be a big concern at this time of the year as well. And just a general inspection. Make sure you're up to date on maintenance intervals. Generally, every 15,000 miles, vehicles are due for service. And, of course, your normal oil and filter changes.
Okay. Well, we have now a couple of people ready to go with questions, so let's talk with them, starting with a Champagne caller in line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a an 86 Chevy Suburban with the big block 454. The anti-pollution function has been disabled over the years. I only bring it up because I think it has something to do with a symptom I'm experiencing. Namely, it seems to run just fine. But when I go to turn off the engine, if I do it in the normal manner, i.e. put it in park first, the engine does not cut off quickly. It continues to percolate. Sometimes it'll scare everybody with a big backfire. As a temporary workaround, I've taken to shutting it down, turning off the ignition while I'm still in drive to take some of the load off, you know, and then it doesn't happen. What should I be looking into to get this failure to cut off situation corrected? And is it doing my engine damage to just stop it while I'm in the drive gear?
No, you're not hurting it at all by putting it in drive. As far as the problem, it's one of two things. Either the carburetor on that is idling too high, or the timing's too far advanced. It's not overheating, is it?
No.
Okay. So it's one of those two, idle speed and timing.
If it's the timing, if it's either of those things, would that significantly impact mileage, which isn't very good on these vehicles to start with?
No, not at all.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
All right, thank you. And next is a caller in Urbana, line two. Hello. It's a caller there on line two.
Hello.
In Urbana. Yes, go ahead.
Yes, I have a 1988 Honda Civic hatchback, which is the most perfect car ever made. And I've kept it all in really good condition, except now the frame rails are rusting, and I've been told that it's not going to be safe to drive. And I was just wondering if there... Are you there?
Yes.
Oh, I was just wondering if there's any way that you could weld on an additional support to those frame rails to keep the car going. I just don't want to give it up.
No, there really isn't. When they start to rust in those areas, that's structural.
Uh-huh.
And if you were to have an accident and somebody was to have added reinforcements, it may not protect you properly.
Uh-huh. So even if you added something, it might not work? Is that what you're saying?
It wouldn't be safe.
Wouldn't be safe, huh?
It's obviously not safe right now, but if it's in that condition, then I wouldn't suggest adding any material.
Okay. Well, I guess that's a good answer, but it's not what I wanted to hear.
Well, you could get estimates as far as replacing that portion of the floor.
Uh-huh.
It's actually part of the chassis.
Uh-huh.
So it would be very expensive.
It would?
Yes.
Like what?
Well, I don't know. I don't, from a body shop standpoint, that's who would have to do that type of work.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. Other questions are welcome. We can't guarantee you'll like the answer, but if you want to call in, talk with Rick Karch, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. So now I'm just curious because when you were just talking about natural, normal maintenance stuff, you said battery is something to think about in the summertime. Mm-hmm. And I think, as you say, probably people think more about that in the winter.
Right.
Than in the summer. What's the problem? Is it just the heat that's not good for it in the summertime?
Yeah, I think it's just the heat and the plates. They expand and they may buckle or touch one another, and the battery can actually short out internally.
Yeah. How much difference is there between the normal operating temperature of the engine and the... normal operating temperature is going to be the same no matter what. But is there really a big difference between the engine temperature in the wintertime, assuming that you get it to what its normal temperature is supposed to be, and what the how hot the engine is going to be in the summer. I mean, is there really a big difference?
No, not really. There's a thermostat. Mm-hmm. So basically, when you start your car, until it reaches the temperature at which the thermostat is, say the thermostat is rated at 190 degrees. That's the point at which the thermostat begins to open. And when the thermostat opens, what that does is it allows the coolant, which is a mixture of ethylene glycol and water, to then flow through the radiator. Mm-hmm. That's the only time it goes through the radiator is when the thermostat opens. So in the winter, if you're taking short trips, the thermostat may never open, depending on how far you drive, of course.
Yeah.
But the sooner it gets up to operating temperature, the more efficient the fuel mileage becomes and the operating characteristics of the vehicle.
Yeah, so that's why taking short trips is such a problem, because it a lot of times it's not going to get to the normal operating temperature.
A lot of times it won't. The other thing that happens is, obviously, one of the byproducts of combustion from the engine is water. And I'm sure people have seen that drip out their tailpipe, is that water sits in the exhaust. And if it never gets to operating temperature,
it just rusts out.
Yeah. Right, it rusts from the inside out.
Yeah. And for just in case people are really curious about this, that there is a gauge, should be a gauge on the dash, something, that will show you the engine temperature. And on there'll be a needle, and on one side it'll be hot and one side it'll be cold. And I guess when it's at its operating temperature, that needle should be pretty much in the middle.
Well, it depends on the manufacturer. Generally the middle to the lower third mark, somewhere in between. If cold was on the left and hot was on the right, it would be a little bit to the left of straight up.
Okay. It's a little bit to the cold side of the
in the middle. Yeah. Some do run right in the middle. Like some of the Fords that have the gauges on them, it usually runs between the O and the R on the word normal. And a lot of cars don't have a gauge. They just have a temperature light.
Oh, mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. I've got some other callers here, and both in Champaign. First is line one. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I have a 96 Dodge Grand Caravan, and it actually runs pretty well, even though it's got 125,000 on it. But sometimes on the freeway, and it's when you're running cruise control, you're driving along, and you hear, or not even maybe hear, but sort of sense a pause, like just for a second or two, and nothing else, and it still seems to run okay. Is this a problem likely with the cruise? You don't notice it so much when you're accelerating or, you know, controlling the car without the cruise. And I don't know whether it's something with the cruise or whether it's happening with your foot, but you just say, oh, I must have moved or whatever. Do you have a guess as to what could be going on?
Well, first thing to do is to, when you're on the highway, when you feel it or sense it, turn the cruise off.
Okay.
And then maintain the speed with your foot.
Okay.
And see if the problem goes away. And if it does, some cruise controls, as time goes on, they become not as sensitive. In other words, sometimes the miles per hour, if you actually were to watch it carefully, it may vary anywhere from 2 to 3 miles per hour.
Okay.
And maybe that's what you're feeling. Is it kind of lets off on the gas and the car slows down, and then it says, oh, wait a minute, I need to be going 65, not 62,
mm-hmm.
and it comes back up. So if you can isolate the two that way, that would answer your question right away.
Well, I know the sense of, you know, like if you're on hills and the cruise is adjusting, you know, you're usually pretty aware
mm-hmm.
of the acceleration and deceleration. But this is usually on completely flat, you know, areas, and it doesn't seem to be correlated to that. But you're saying just normal wear could make it sort of behave like that?
Yes, particularly on flat terrain.
Okay.
On the cruises. But if you just isolate it from the cruise, that would be helpful. In other words,
okay.
Does it only do it with the cruise on?
Yeah.
And then you would know that it's related to what I was mentioning.
Yeah, I think it probably does, but we'll have to try to watch. If that's the case, is this in any way a safety issue, or is it just annoying?
Annoying.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Let's go to line number two, also Champaign. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I have an 89 Acura Legend, and when it gets up to operating temperature, it sputters, and there's a lag in acceleration. But while the engine's cool, it runs fine.
What type of maintenance have you been doing fuel filter-wise? oxygen sensors.
I think it's got a relatively new fuel filter, and I've been running injection cleaner through it occasionally.
Mm-hmm. When it sputters, you kind of help me a little bit. When, like, if you're going 30 mile an hour or 35 miles an hour, do you feel it, or is it just an idle? Or
it will sputter on the idle, and it it'll also sputter when I step on the gas.
So by sputter, do you mean that it's running rough also?
Yes.
Okay. But it's okay cold? Or the problem doesn't seem as magnified cold?
Right. It's much better when the engine's cold.
Okay. But you can still sense that it's there?
I don't know. It varies. I think it varies. I mean, maybe, but not. It's not always noticeable.
Okay. I would suggest checking the spark plug wires.
Okay, that's...
The spark plug wires on that car, they go down through the valve cover, and they're about 4 to 4.5 inches long, like an extension almost. And if you take those out individually and look at them yourself, when you look at the plastic tube, what you're looking for is like, would look like somebody took a pencil and colored it. And that will be an indication that there's a hole there in that extension tube. And what's happening then when you accelerate in particular is there's more spark required, and it will actually arc to ground. But it's doing it down inside, and you can't see that. But if you take them out and look at them visually, you will.
Should I go ahead and replace the plugs and the distributor cap as well?
Only if they need it. And you want to make sure the engine's off, obviously, when you take those plug wires out.
Right.
Right. But you should be able to look at that visually. That would be the first thing I would look at. It's pretty common with those, and the reason being there's so much heat down in there. There's actually a protective boot on the top, and whatever heat is generated from the engine just sits down in there.
Well, I've noticed that one of the boots, it comes loose occasionally.
Okay. Well, that's the one I would look at first then.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. Thanks for the call. Others are certainly welcome. If you have some car questions, our guest this morning is Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive in Champaign. He's on the program generally every season, and we give you a chance to call in and talk about your cars and tell us what it is and give us the description of the problem. I know Rick will see if he can help you out. 333-9455, that's the Champaign-Urbana number. We do also have a toll-free line. That means if it would be a long-distance call, we'll pay for the call. That's 800-222-9455. Again, 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana, and toll-free 800-222-9455. Just a minute ago, we were talking about one of the problems with short trips, and that it's very hard on exhaust systems for, you know, the reason that you explained, that you get water vapor coming out of the as a result of the combustion. And if the car doesn't get warm enough, it'll collect in the exhaust. It won't evaporate out, and then eventually you'll get a problem with rust. Are there any other things that you typically associate with particular kind of stresses that you associate with just doing a lot of short trip driving?
Well, the other thing with regards to moisture, as the engine warms up and cools down, there's some condensation that occurs on the inside of the crankcase, which is where the oil is in the bottom of the engine, and the moisture gets in the oil, and if it doesn't get up to operating temperature, of course, it doesn't evaporate. So, you know, real short trips, you need to pay a little more attention to the time interval for oil services as opposed to the mileage interval.
Oh,
uh-huh. So we have a lot of customers that you typically recommend 3 months or 3,000 miles. Well, sometimes at 3 months, they may have only put 1,000 miles on their car. So, but if they're extended trips, then you need to put that into the equation to determine how often to change the oil. But if they're real short trips, you need to stay with the time interval. And that's another thing to consider when you look at a maintenance schedule in a book. It'll list across the top, it'll list mileage, but it'll also list months from purchase date.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So some people can go by mileage. Some people have to go by the time factor.
Okay, good. Good to keep in mind. We have a number of callers here. In fact, the lines are full, so we'll talk first to somebody here on the cell phone on line number one. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I have an 88 Toyota Corolla, and when I start up first thing in the morning, it will, on its own, before I do anything, it'll start idling way high, way low, way high, way low, until I kick it off the idle, and then it'll be just fine. And then later on, if I'm driving somewhere and I stop and go to the store and get back in the car and start it up, it's kind of hard to start. And that's all the problems I have with it, really.
I don't know on that particular one. Is that the one with the that has the carburetor that's, you may not know this either, but...
Yeah, it was the last year of the carbureted.
Okay. It's that slide-type carburetor. And it's very similar to what's on a motorcycle. And they're very complicated in terms of what they've done with vacuum hoses and solenoids. And probably the first thing to do is to go through all the basic adjustments, if you can find somebody that will look at it for you.
Okay.
But that's pretty complicated system.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Yeah, I kind of wondered because, well, I mean, it runs great otherwise.
Right.
Great gas mileage, but mm-hmm. it's just that aggravating starting first thing in the morning. And,
right.
And, yeah.
You know, depending on how much it bothers you, I guess, you know, you might figure anywhere from 1 to 3 hours maybe to go through all the different circuits to control and operate when it's cold, because you only have a brief period of time to test those things.
Uh-huh.
So the financial end may enter into the annoyance.
Yeah. No, it's not doing anything else other than that, so I'll probably just end up leaving it the way it is. So.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you, sir. Thanks.
Thank you. We'll go next up to Aurora and our line number four. Hello.
Hi. This isn't an automotive question, but it's allied question. I just visited my sister in New York and friends in New Jersey, and I'm always amazed that they do not have to take a test, for a driving test. And I just wondered, how many other states do not make this a provision in their laws? Are you?
That's really interesting. I didn't know. You're in New York State and in New Jersey, you don't have to take a test to get a driver's license.
No, my friend, when she just laughed at me when I was telling her about my agony in November, having to take my test around my birthday, and she just laughed. She says, "What are you talking about?" And I told her. She says, "We never have to take a test. I haven't taken a test in 40 years."
I just couldn't believe that.
I don't know. Well, I'm sure she had to take a test when she first got her license. Maybe what they don't have is they don't have a program that makes you periodically retest.
They don't.
Okay. Because I know I haven't taken it since I first got my license, and that's been a while.
But and as you get older, they make you take either the written or the test, the driving test.
Yeah, I think in Illinois, if you get to a certain age, you have to take the driving test every year.
Yeah, I think that's
right. I just thought that was, I just wondered how many other states, and especially New York, it would seem to me, and I finally says to my sister when she went through a couple of red lights and yellow lights, I said, "Moss, I hate to tell you, but you wouldn't pass." Just, you know, kind of making a point of it gently, I hope. So I just thought that was, wondered if you knew.
No,
so
I do not.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right,
okay.
Thanks.
That's something I guess I never really thought very much. I suppose AAA, maybe if you called AAA and you asked them, they'd be able to tell you. I don't know. Let's go to Wellington for the next caller, line number two.
Yes, we have a 1996 Intrepid, and we have a little less than 80,000 miles on it. So we're looking to drive it for another 4 or 5 years yet, probably. Two questions I have regarding it. This is the first vehicle we've ever had that's had power locks and power windows. Since we intend to keep it for an extended period of time, is there any kind of preventive maintenance that we can do to keep those functional? And the other thing is we've had to replace oxygen sensors a couple times. Is there kind of a certain amount of miles or time frame that you can expect those to go haywire?
The oxygen sensors generally... their life expectancy is about 90,000 miles, as long as the engine's running properly. If there's an injector problem, injector is dirty and the spray pattern is poor, then their life expectancy would be shorter. As far as the door locks, no. Typically what happens with those is either a solenoid in the door, which is like a little motor, or the problem with the switches. And usually when there's a problem with the switches, you can kind of sense that just because of the way it feels or the audible click that it makes when there's a problem with them. But generally, there isn't really anything maintenance-wise with door locks.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. Thanks for the call. We have some other folks who are listening here, and we will get right on to them in just a moment. I do, however, want to mention once again that weather information that I talked about at the beginning of the program. The Weather Service in Lincoln has issued a flash flood warning for Piatt County in central Illinois, and that will be in effect until 4 o'clock this afternoon. And I'm looking at the weather radar here, and there is a very large area of heavy rain covering a good part of Piatt County, and it seems to be moving fairly slowly. Earlier on, they were reporting estimated rainfall totals of between 1.5 and 2 inches per hour, with those storms moving into the western part of Piatt, and that was about a half an hour ago. And now you can see that they have also started to move across the border between Piatt and Champaign County. So we should expect they're moving this way. So at some point, we'll probably get some heavy rain, at least in the western part of Champaign County. So do keep in mind that a flash flood warning means that flooding is imminent or occurring. And if you're in a flood-prone area, move to higher ground. If you live along creeks and streams, you're especially vulnerable. And remember, don't try to cross flooded areas either on foot or in a vehicle. And this will be in effect until 4 o'clock this afternoon for Piatt County. And, of course, any further weather information that we get, we'll bring it to you. And do stay with us throughout the afternoon here. Our next comprehensive look at the weather will be as part of the afternoon magazine, and that will be at 12:35. This morning here on this part of Focus, we're talking with Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive in Champaign. He's generally with us every season, and we talk about cars. And if you have a problem, you need some advice, give us a call, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Terre Haute is next over there in Indiana, line number 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hi. I have a 1994 Dodge Grand Caravan that's having some brake problems, and the local mechanics are having difficulties diagnosing it. I think it has something to do with the ABS system, but we're not sure. When I depress the brakes, and this doesn't happen every time, it only happens occasionally, it feels as if it loses pressure, and the pedal goes down. It doesn't go down all the way to the floor. And stopping distances are greatly increased, even though it does stop.
There's no pulsation of the pedal?
There's no pulsation. It's just a loss of pressure.
Okay.
And the mechanic finally decided we needed to replace the master cylinder, which we did, but it hasn't changed a thing. Occasionally, the ABS light comes on, but it's almost at random. It's not always in conjunction with the brake failure.
Okay, but there's definitely no pulsation in the brake pedal.
Correct.
Did they check the code with regards to the ABS?
No, I don't know whether they did that or not.
Okay. How many miles are in the car?
About 165,000.
Okay. If you sit at a stoplight for, say, 2 minutes, and you have your foot on the brake pedal with moderate pressure, what does the brake pedal do?
It remains steady. It never fails in that situation.
Okay.
It only seems to fail as I initially apply the brake.
Okay. Have they completely flushed the brake system? Changed all the brake fluid? A lot of times when people put, the reason I ask is there's a lot of different ways to put a master cylinder on.
Okay.
Some people put the master cylinder on, they'll bleed it before they put it on the vehicle, and then they'll bleed it right at the lines of the master cylinder and not at the wheels.
Mm-hmm.
And have you recently had brake pads replaced?
Well, he checked everything and he said everything else looks fine. He's telling me that the problem is that it's not acting up when he tries to diagnose it.
Right.
There's no evidence of any problems.
Well, the reason I'm asking about prior brake work and the bleeding procedure is with the anti-lock brake system, there's a series of solenoids for each of the different respective wheels, depending if it's has what's referred to as four-wheel anti-lock or three-wheel, which means the two front wheels are independent and then the rear axle has its own. It varies from manufacturer to manufacturer. But sometimes when you replace brake pads and you push the piston back into the caliper to compensate for the wear of the pad so you can get the new pad in there because it's thicker, mm-hmm. that you'll move that fluid back toward the master cylinder, and any little piece of rubber or debris or dirt or anything like that can get up into the anti-lock brake solenoids, and they'll do exactly what you're talking about.
Oh, okay.
Is sometimes you'll step on the brake. It's just like it's a little piece just kind of running around in there, and sometimes it ends up in the wrong place, which is between the seal of one of the solenoids and its seat. And when you step on the brake pedal, it's holding that solenoid off the seat, and, of course, the pressure there's pressure loss, which is what you sense when the brake pedal goes down. So maybe the place to start is to completely flush the brake system.
Okay.
And get all new fluid everywhere.
Okay.
First. And then find out what that code is.
And then check the code.
Right. Because the question I was asking you about the pulsating brake pedal is kind of an important question because it makes a big difference in how you would go about diagnosing the problem. Mm-hmm.
No, there's never been any pulsation.
Okay. That's
fine. Just always the loss of pressure.
Okay. Then that's where I would suggest
starting,
is completely get all the brake fluid out of the car and all new. Bleed all the wheels.
And if there is anything in there, it'll flush out.
Yes.
Hopefully.
Yes.
With the fluids.
Correct.
Well, great. I appreciate the lead.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for
Thank
going.
You.
Bye. We'll continue here. And our next person in line should be in Mattoon. And line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Go ahead.
My wife has a 1991 Mazda Miata. We bought it last summer. And every now and then, well, usually if you start it cold, it starts over fine. But if you drive, say, 20 miles or something like that, and you try to restart it after you've gotten out of it for a while, it has a tendency to not kick right over.
Now, when you mean kick right over, you mean the starter motor works?
It works.
Okay, so you crank and crank and crank, and it finally starts, and then it runs a little bit rough, and then it smooths out?
Right,
okay.
Exactly.
Okay, it's losing residual fuel pressure. When you shut that vehicle off, it should maintain fuel pressure in the system. And what's happening is you, by cranking and cranking, you have to reestablish the pressure before it finally starts. There's three things that can cause that. The only way to know and isolate it is to put a fuel pressure gauge on it and monitor it after you shut it off. But it can be within the fuel pump, there's a check valve. So there's the check valve and the fuel pump. You have the four injectors. One of them may be dripping. And then you have a fuel pressure regulator. Fuel pressure regulator is what maintains the fuel pressure.
Okay.
And from the fuel pressure regulator, it goes back to the gas tank. It's one of those three.
Okay, that's the fuel pump and
fuel
the
pump,
fuel
check
pump,
valve.
The regulator.
Fuel pressure regulator.
Okay.
Or the injectors.
Or the injector.
Yes.
Okay.
The first thing to do, since the car's not been driven a lot, is I would suggest using some fuel injector cleaner for two tanks and see if that helps.
Okay.
Fuel injector cleaner, you can purchase that at any parts store.
Okay.
And it's a type that you just simply add to the gas tank. You just pour it right in.
All right.
That will eliminate the injector problem. If it is an injector problem, it should fix it. If it doesn't fix it, then you're down to the fuel pump check valve or the fuel pressure regulator.
Okay. Check valve regulator. Okay. Right. Thank you very much.
Sure. All right. Thanks for the call. How many cars now have injectors? Is it
almost all?
Almost
them.
Everybody
yeah.
now?
Carburetors are fortunately a thing of the past. I used to enjoy working on them, but they get kind of frustrating now.
This is one of those things that you have for a long time now have recommended as an easy periodic maintenance item. That is the fuel injector cleaner.
Right.
How often?
About four times a year.
Okay, so roughly every time Rick here is on the program, you can go out and buy it, and then it's just a matter of going to some auto supply place, or I suppose you could go to Kmart or someplace
sure.
like that.
Any
and it's just
places.
A bottle of the thing, and when you fill up the tank,
then take this and just pour it in.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Very simple.
And that should help keep things running a little bit better.
Right.
Can clean out that system. As I said, the problem, as you've described, is the injectors are like sprayers, and if the spray pattern is, if stuff clogs them up, the spray pattern's not right, it's going to affect the performance.
Affects the performance, mileage in particular. Fuel mileage is one of the biggest things. It'll affect the idle characteristics. It's kind of like on the end of your garden hose, if you buy a real cheap spray nozzle, how the spray pattern, it may be going all the way to one side. In other words, most of the water goes to the right or to the left. That's exactly what happens to an injector.
Uh-huh.
And it's the same thing on your car. The deposits that occur are when you shut the car off. There's always a little drip that just sits there on the end of the injector. And, of course, as it evaporates, it leaves a residue. And over time, that builds up and builds up and builds up. And an injector opening is only about 4/1000ths of an inch. Mm-hmm. So it's quite mm-hmm. small. And that's why I recommend 4 times a year.
Okay. We'll keep going here. We have several callers here, and we're in there getting into our last 15 minutes with Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive in Champaign. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. And we'll talk next with someone in Mahomet on line 4. Hello.
Hello, Rick.
Good morning.
Good morning. We have an O2 Mercury, a large one, and we're wondering if we would get better longevity out of our car if we change to Mobile 1. Is it worth the
expense? Well, I wouldn't think on that car that you'd gain much. I mean, it's almost $5 a quart. Approximately.
Right.
And, I mean, if you wanted to change, if the reason to go to Mobile 1 would be to extend the oil change intervals, then I'd say, yes, it might be worthwhile. But as far as longevity is concerned, I don't think you're going to find any gain there.
I see.
If you had a performance car or something like that was stressed very highly, I'd say, yes, it would be worthwhile.
If we had started when the car was brand new, would it be worth it then?
No, I wouldn't see any gain.
Okay.
Now, does the car sit outside or is it in a garage?
It's in the garage.
Well, then I wouldn't spend the extra money on it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay. Thank
Bye.
You. To Charleston, line 2. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, good morning. I have a question regarding E9 Civic. I have my brakes recently checked, and the fluids changed, et cetera, and they're all fine. Everything's good over the brakes. I've noticed that when I am sitting, like, on a downhill position in a stoplight, it feels like your brake is kind of spongy sometimes, like it wants to squeeze down on you.
Yeah, the pedal sinks.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. it's predominantly when you're on a decline.
Mm-hmm.
What might be causing that?
It needs a new master cylinder. The brake master cylinder.
Okay, it does it periodically. Is that something that should be taken care of, or is it something that's going to linger for who knows when?
I would replace it.
Okay, how expensive a job is that?
You just have to call around and get some prices. I don't know specifically how much it is, but anything related to the brake system that doesn't feel right, I just don't think it's a place to cut any kind of corners.
Okay. Well, I will have it checked out then.
Okay.
Thank you then.
You're welcome.
So what does the master cylinder do exactly?
Brake master cylinder?
Yeah, brake master cylinder.
When you step on the brake pedal, there's a rod that moves inside, and it basically creates the pressure that applies the brakes. And what's happening to him is that when he's sitting at a stoplight with his foot on the brake pedal with just moderate pressure and the pedal is going down, 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 is that it's bleeding internally past the seals within the master cylinder. It's not an external leak, it's an internal leak. And that's why you won't lose fluid or have to add fluid, obviously.
But there's some danger that when you then want to put the brakes on, they won't...
No, not usually, because when you push on the pedal fairly hard... the seals usually work fine. It just seems Hondas and Acuras is probably the ones that I see that the most on. Hmm. But it's, like I said, the brakes are not something that I mean, if there's something wrong, it needs to be taken care of.
Yeah, you don't want to mess with it.
No. I mean, they can run crummy, but they got to stop.
Yes. Line 3 is next in Indiana. Hello.
Yes, since we've had all this rain, I've discovered something about my car. Then when I started thinking about it, I realized it's happened in the past. But it's always when the humidity's pretty high or after a recent rain started up. And I usually just don't take off immediately, you know, usually putting something around. And I've noticed, I guess I'll call it stumbling. We'll have the regular idle at a higher speed, and when the oil gets up to pressure or temperature or whatever, it drops back down to the regular idle. Well, when it drops back down, a lot of times it sort of almost stalls. So I'd call it stumbling or something, and which is sort of surprising, but it's happened right 3 or 4 times already in the last 2 weeks. And then one time I got in the car and started up, and I left immediately like I usually do, and it almost stalled on me. But after it seems to warm up, you know, I don't have any problem. If I go to a mall and hop in the car and take off, I don't get the same problem. It's just usually from an overnight startup, especially when we have a lot of moisture in the air, I guess I'd say.
Yeah, it's typically related to spark plug wires,
mm-hmm.
or distributor cap.
Okay. I was guessing distributor cap, but you can't see much in these new cars, so
no.
I don't really what the hell's going on. You know?
Right. And that's
okay,
something you can check that on your own. Just take a Windex bottle and fill it with just water,
mm-hmm.
and you just spray the wires while it's sitting there idling, and you'll actually be able to see, because the water becomes a conductor to ground.
Yeah,
and that's basically what happens, and you'll actually see the spark transfer to ground.
Okay, well, thanks a lot.
Sure.
All right, thank you for the call. Next up here, we have somebody in Urbana, line number 1. Hello.
Hello. I'm thinking about having my car repainted, and I'd like to get your opinion on that. It's a 99 Corolla, which I purchased 2 years ago, and the previous owner had been involved in a minor accident and had some body work done on the left rear fender. They did not replace the mud flap. All the other 3 wheels have mud flaps on them. This spring, I started noticing some rust on the lip where the mud flap would attach there.
Yes.
Okay. Also, I'm getting some, I guess I call it bubbling of the paint.
Right, that's rust.
On the hood, mm-hmm. trunk, and roof. It looks like small bubbles less than the diameter of a pencil eraser appear, and then they eventually open up to bare metal, and, you know, then that, of course, rust. I was just wondering if you think I should get the car repainted at this point. It's only got 38,000 miles on it, and I plan on keeping it a long time.
Well, I would visit at least 3 body shops and get estimates.
Uh-huh.
No one can guarantee rust.
Uh-huh.
So it typically comes back in a year. I mean, you sand it down and you do a barrier or a rust preventative. And the problem in the back where the mud flap was is when they drilled the holes to mount the mud flap, they didn't put any kind of sealer on the screws when they screwed them back into the body, and that's why it rusted there. But after you get a few estimates, I think you'll probably think twice about repainting the car.
Uh-huh.
It's quite expensive.
I see.
I mean, you might be talking.
I don't care so much about appearance. Would it do any good if I just tried to address that myself? You know, sanding and put. I think one of my friends once mentioned a product called Extend that will help stabilize rust, and then just try to touch up the spot.
Well, most of the products that are available to the consumer are not really that good,
mm-hmm.
from a rust preventative standpoint. So you're best to go to a body shop and get some estimates and maybe see what they think about just fixing those immediate areas that are occurring right now as opposed to repainting the whole car.
Okay, well, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. We'll keep on here. Next up, we have caller in Urbana. This would be line number 2. Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm about two repairs or $500 into a front end shake in my daughter's 1994 Honda Accord. It's got about 120,000 miles on it. I've had it to two places here locally. And what happens is that at cruise or not under load, the thing is pretty smooth, but you know, if you really punch it in third gear, you get a pretty strong vibration from the front. And so far we've done ball joints and then the radius arm bushing, which is, you know, up at the subframe. To
keep it's not any of those things.
And I don't know whether to go for axles. I mean, there's no snap, crackle, pop when it turns.
Correct.
And we've had new tires put on it, and it's been aligned in like the last week. So.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't have anything to do with those parts you've mentioned. It's the inner CV joints.
Okay. The inner CV joints.
Correct.
Do we typically replace those
yes.
inner and outer as an axle unit these days?
It's cheaper to you to replace it as an assembly.
Okay.
Because they typically have a lifetime warranty on the part.
Uh-huh.
So you'd replace both axles.
Both axles.
Correct. And that'll take care of it.
If we've got one side that's bad, would you, and if we can figure out which one it is, it seems to happen a little bit worse when you turn to the left, meaning, or to the right, meaning that would be the left side. Would you suggest doing one or just doing both?
Well,
I mean, I'm not sure I can tell which one it is.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. If I can generally tell when I drive one if it's the left inner or the right inner.
Okay.
But any kind of vibration or resonance or harmonics, however you want to define it, under a kind of a moderate to hard load on a front-wheel drive car is the inner CV joints.
Right. All right. Well, you sound pretty certain, Rick.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
All
sure.
right. We'll
Bye-bye.
Go on to your another caller here in Champaign in line 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes. I have a 1990 Dodge Colt. My wife is driving. It was kind of losing power, cutting out, dying. She would start it again. It would die, and I ended up towing it over. And I thought it was a fuel supply problem. It's fuel injected. And I dropped the tank out and cleaned it and then had to coat it because it looked pretty grimy. I replaced the fuel pump, put it back together, and it's kind of doing the same thing. I was able to, when I started back up again, it would start like everything was happening, and then it would just die instantly. And we could get it to run if I gave it gas and kicked up the manual idle a little bit, but then it still cuts out under a load, and it's just, you know, the check engine light comes on, and there's just something else going on there. Like, I don't know if it's fuel-related. I mean, I think I have the fuel supply taken care of.
Well, if the check engine light is coming on, that will help diagnose the problem.
Okay.
Once you evaluate what code's in there.
Right. It doesn't. This thing doesn't really give you codes unless it has cruise control. You don't. It's not one of those. You know, it's 1990, so I don't think it has the readout capability.
Right. What is it that?
1990 Dodge Colt.
It's ex-carbureted, isn't it?
That's not. It's fuel injected.
It is fuel injected?
Yes.
Okay.
Multi-port.
Mm-hmm. Well, you sound like you can do a lot of things. Why don't you monitor fuel pressure?
I was thinking about that, but I don't have a fuel pressure gauge but or tester, but of course I could buy one. But having gone through, that's the only thing I did, so I'm thinking that shouldn't be it.
You know, I know, but...
What about the throttle position switch or...
Well, that's the problem. See, you can... This is one of the situations where you can talk about it a long time, but but what you need to do is start isolating things.
Yep.
We need to say, okay, we'll monitor fuel pressure, and now we can say fuel pressure is not the problem. So we can eliminate fuel from the equation, and then we can start looking at the ignition system.
Okay.
And that's how you have to approach these things. I mean, I realize you put a new fuel pump in, but just because it's a new fuel pump doesn't mean that it's working properly.
Right, right.
That's what's sometimes very frustrating about this business.
And last night when I was driving, it was doing that cutting out thing, and I thought, well, I'll just go put some gas in it because I didn't have much in it because I just cleaned out the tank, and I put some injector cleaner in there, and then I pull out of the gas station, and the red light goes out, and it's driving fine. And then all of a sudden the red light comes back on, and it's like one of those intermittent problems,
right.
too, which, of course, are the worst variety.
Correct.
Okay, I guess I'll just continue to try and isolate.
Yes.
Thanks for help.
All right. Thank you. We are getting pretty close to the point where we've used our time. We don't have anybody hanging on here waiting to go. Any last little bits of advice you'd like to leave with people?
Probably, it seems like kind of had a run on air conditioning work Of course, I do every summer, but a lot of conversions, converting from the old Freon, which is the R12, to the new Freon, which is the R134. When you do that, I try to always explain to people ahead of time that the old refrigerant was much more efficient than the new, and it's not that there's a problem with the new refrigerant, and it's just that the new refrigerant is designed to have larger components in the system. There's two main components in the air conditioning system. There's the evaporator, and then there's a condenser. They both kind of look like little radiators, but the condensers are smaller for the old R12 system. So basically, the bottom line is, if you convert, let's say you were the temperature coming out of the ducts is going to be approximately 4 degrees warmer with the new Freon. So it's not going to cool as well. And, of course, that's really the only choice to do
that. Do you cool or not?
So, so you really don't have any choice. And when you do a conversion, all shops will do it as carefully as they can. They'll evacuate the system. They'll bring it down into a vacuum. They'll let it sit in a vacuum for a while, monitor the gauges, and then they'll charge the system. And you want to make sure that when they recharge the system, they put a dye in there. Some of these leaks are so small that the electronic leak detectors can't find it. And the dye allows you to look at it a week to 2 weeks later with a black light and find the really small leaks. And usually they're O-rings. And it can become very frustrating to a customer because it's like, well, I just paid you to fix it and convert it. But that the reason that it was converted is because there was a leak. In other words, if it's low on Freon, you know there's a leak. So don't get upset with the repair facility because, I mean, they're doing the best they can, and you're just going to have kind of have to work with it because these O-rings dry out and seals become brittle and small leaks will appear. And you may it's kind of like you fix an old raft for the kids and you fix one leak and then they come back and they say it's empty again. You fix another leak and, you know, you fix the big leak, you put pressure on all the weak spots, and then all the weak spots start to create another leak. Yeah. It's very similar on an air conditioning system. So, and it can get expensive, unfortunately.
Well, thank you very much for being here. We appreciate it. Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive in Champaign. I expect we'll see him again in the fall. Programming here on AM 580, made possible in part by a grant from the Thrifty Nichols American Classifieds, distributed each Thursday in over 100 towns in East Central Illinois, on the web at AmericanClassifieds.com. The program also made possible by a grant from the Living Yoga Center in downtown Champaign, offering a variety of classes designed to help students bring balance into their lives by finding strength and serenity through the practice of yoga. Class is ongoing. You may join anytime. For more information, call 384-5829 or visit the website at www.livingyogacenter.net. We'll take a break for news and an update on the markets. When we continue, we'll be talking with three environmental scientists about PCBs. Hope that you'll stick around. Right now, though, here's the markets.